As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome you once again, Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick. Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is your official Toronto Maple Leaf destination for all 82 regular season games, home and away. And ugly, a 4-1 win for the Boston Bruins over the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll go over the particulars of tonight's game, hear from many of the principals, including Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle. The storyline, Ozzy, about Zdeno Chara is very much a moot point given the events tonight. He'll be missed by the Boston Bruins, but certainly wasn't missed in tonight's game. Wow, that was an ugly effort.
No, you know what, Gord? I don't know if I have enough adjectives to describe my surprise, my disappointment, my disbelief in what
dismay. A lot of dis.
Yeah, a lot right there, as you mentioned. You know, the Leafs were simply outclassed tonight. It was close for the first little part of the game. And
very little.
I know that, you know, the Bruins get on the scoreboard on the power play. Another one of those lucky bounces that go, you know, went to right to Carl Soderberg.
Almost had two fortunate bounces on that play. Because yeah. Dougie Hamilton wide, then, yeah, a little bit both.
But you know what? It's a 1-0 hockey game. And in the second period, the Krejci goal near the end of the second period, I think, really took the wind out of the sails of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the three stars tonight, Dougie Hamilton was the first star. Tuukka Rask was in there. And I think that just put the icing on the cake of pain. Pain, right? Because of trades and all that kind of stuff. So it's just you come away just, man, shaking your head and thinking the effort just was not there again on home ice.
Well, and I always try to, when I said to you, the analogy is when we kick things off, walk like we're going to the subway talking about the game. You know, this would be a night I'd probably walk in silence. You know, there are games like that. You walk out of some place, you walk out. So you mentioned about Tuukka Rask, and to be honest, like the Leafs had a little bit of spark late in the game. They were down 4-0, and then Richard Ponick got his first goal as a Maple Leaf, and that ended any shutout hopes for Tuukka Rask. But did the Leafs get any scoring chances? Like, seriously. Like, I mean, there was just, I mean, with Zdeno, I know before that, yeah. With Zdeno Chara not there, mm-hmm. Jody Boychuk gone, all that stuff. I know defense of the team game. Did they get scoring chances?
You know what? There was maybe one scoring chance where you would say Morgan Rielly had a point-blank shot and Tuukka Rask came out and may have gotten a piece of it, and that was probably the only one of significance that that I can remember throughout, you know, the better part of the night where the Leafs were anywhere around the Boston net, right?
Well, I almost feel like that Game 7 in the playoffs, except different. The Game 7, of course, was incredible emotion, incredible, a lot of things, compelling for all the wrong reasons for Maple Leaf fans. This one, I'm feeling that, I wanted to know what the heck happened. I was trying to retrace the steps in that third period and the overtime. This one, I'm trying to retrace the steps for 60 minutes. And, you know, we're watching the game early on. Jonathan Bernier played okay at the start. James Reimer came in, had to make a couple of big saves when it was 4-0. I mean, they just, it was. And some of the commentators, Craig Simpson talking about the fact that we were both at the morning skate. He mentions that you've had morning skates with a lot of teams and about there seemed to be a lack of buzz, lack of energy. I don't know what you equated to or not, but he seemed to feel that was the way they played again tonight. I don't know whether you're supposed to have buzz or energy at the morning skate. Quite often we start grasping at straws trying to figure anything out.
No, that's more than likely the case, because we sometimes, you know, make comparisons. I know we did it last year when you and I worked together, you know, for Leaf TV in the morning skates, where what's the difference between the two teams? And it was so obvious to us. Leafs were very quiet. There wasn't a lot of chatter. The visiting team would come in and, man, they were lively. They couldn't wait to get out on the ice. And I mean, it was basically, that's the way the season ended for the Maple Leafs. And today, I don't know if I would put that much, emphasis on the fact that it was quiet today. You might say, you know, players are still being respectful from what happened the other day in Ottawa. you know, nonetheless, we expected a different type of effort tonight. I think still you're down 2-0 going into the third period, and you're on the power play. And I think really what just spoke volumes was the lack of effort by not only Jay Gardner, but Dion Phaneuf on the Gregory Campbell goal that basically put the icing on the cake. That was 3-0. And then no sooner than later than Dougie Hamilton blows by Jay Gardner once again through our defense. He's a defenseman. How in the world did he jump up into the rush and break in and let a quick shot go over Bernier's glove that made it 4-0? I don't care that the Leafs got 18 shots on net in the third period. It didn't matter after that.
Well, and Jake Gardner still played after that. I thought he would be ripe for two shifts like that, back-to-back shifts. By the way, on the power play as well, the Leafs now are scoreless in their last 19 consecutive power play opportunities, which ties a team record, and which they set last year, February 4th to March 8th. Last longest stretch of that thing. Okay, so the team record probably goes back to my era, is what you're saying, Maddie. Okay, yeah. So anyway, it was 19 straight, and anyway, that's something like teams like the Winnipeg Jets who are struggling. They started the season without a power play goal, and they finally got one last night. Anyway, who cares about the Jets?
Yeah, you know what?
Talking about the Leafs.
I think what adds insult to injury in this entire affair, Gord, is that, you know, Boston has been struggling, right, for this
4-5-0. Darn right.
You know, they weren't the same big bad Bruins, and yet you wouldn't have convinced me after watching them tonight. First to lose pucks, and you look at their defensive core. And by the way, who got the assignment to play against the Bozak, James Van Riemsdyk, Kessel line? Okay, Dennis Seidenberg is a good defensive defenseman paired up with Dougie Hamilton, but this is not Seidenberg and Chara playing against that top line. And not only does Dougie Hamilton get 3 points on the night, Seidenberg adds an assist as well. Is like those two guys as a shutdown pair ended up getting four points amongst the two of them.
Okay, we're on Leafs Nation postgame. So Bruins Nation postgame is talking about where will they play Zdeno Chara when he's healthy? Will there be a spot on the Bruins D? I am so bleeped off about this game. Like, I just am. It's a signature game. I know we say that maybe quite often a little bit too much, but they needed to make a statement at home. I guess more a statement game. You need to make a statement at home. Need to make a statement about the team that still rubs raw with Maple Leaf fans and decidedly so, deservedly so, from a year and a half ago. And the statement you made was, we're not going to show up. We're not going to compete. Oh, my God. Like, you know, like apathy. That's the worst one.
Yeah.
That's the worst one.
But I think in our pregame show, I was being a little bit hard on Dion Phaneuf, you know, and I said that I expected more, you know, from notwithstanding the fact that
you're being constructive.
I'm being constructive to say, okay, you know, as a passionate former Maple Leaf and fan and just making comparables around the league, you know, we're saying, what do we need to see more of from this team? And we talked about Nazem Kadri's got to be a better second line centerman for this team. You need Lupula to stay healthy, but you need your leadership, core group of leadership. You added some guys to this team last year because you needed Stefan Robidoux to provide a little bit of leadership from his, you know, years of service in the National Hockey League. And then Dion's effort, not only on the Krejci goal, he's got to recognize that Kessel is getting beat going to the net, and Dion is standing there like,
I mean, Kessel's actually doing a decent job trying to stay with him and back check. And then Dion, again, I'm sort of jumping on. I'm thinking about it in slow motion. So Dion's moving over like Kessel has him. And Dion's, anyway, but you're right.
But that's part of the containment. That's part of the things. That's part of the defensive play that frustrates me to no end, is that playing defense without the puck involves some commitment, some passion, and just some jam in your game. And when your captain is in position and yet just seems to be just apathetic at times, that's the only descriptive word, you know, just kind of, again, typified the way the Leafs collectively as a group played this evening without any emotion, without any passion, and without any real commitment, albeit there still was a couple of guys. Like David Clarkson did what he could do, took a couple of penalties that were kind of, you know, would you say foolish or whatever, maybe over the edge, and it could go here or there, but at least he's trying, right? He laid out you know, a great check in the corner, right? Took a penalty on the play.
Thought they're going to get another.
At least he's battling and competing. Leo Komarov, the same thing. Like, it's a given that those third-line guys have come to play, but, you know, goodness gracious, are you going to say that it's Randy Carlyle's fault that Jay Gardner once again was indifferent without the puck?
Well, the hit on Adam McQuaid, you thought that was going to be another injury. It's interesting how quick it turned, and then that ends up being a Bruin power play, and they score on the power play. And I agree about giving David Clarkson kudos. He got extra power play time as well, too, when the Leafs had power play opportunities. They're trying to get something going. Now, here's one I want to ask you. You're going to say, Gord, why are you even asking this? It's a stupid, chintzy question. But about throwing the towel on the camera in the penalty box, I don't know. That one I always find irks me, and doesn't make, not because we're in the media. It's just one of those realities of things, and I don't get. I find it sucky. I find it almost childish. What's the point?
Who ended up doing that?
Clarkson did it twice.
Oh, Clarkson did it. Put the stuff on the camera.
So of course Glenn Healy likes to make a point of it. Oh, put the thing on the camera, and guess what? They score. Just sort of, you know, what just that kind of thing. Yeah, you're focusing on putting the towel on the camera because he's passionate about the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. But I don't know. I just find that that's a loser move. That's all I mean.
The players know that, you know, things have progressed where there are cameras in certain places, and they know it's their part of their responsibility. I think, you know, for media purposes, for the fans to see the different camera angles and everything like that. And I would agree with you there. He's upset, but to show displeasure basically to the fans is that's.
Well, that's what you tell your kids not to do. Yeah. Right? I just, you know, that's what the kind of thing. Anyway, it was just, it's that kind of night. And I go back to, and you talked about the emotion of the night. And by the way, I don't know if we've talked about it, but to me, Don Cherry really nailed it. I thought Don Cherry, you know, he's become kind of the galvanizing guy in these tragedies and anything involving people losing their lives or just the military in general. And a coach's corner, predictable, but we wanted that. We expected that. And Ron McLean didn't say a word, nor did he need to. And Grapes then took it one step further about don't let it end now, and talked about war veterans and people that have been injured and people that need help finding jobs and injuries and all that kind of stuff. And very passionate, very powerful, very compelling.
Yeah, very very emotional and touching. And I think that's one of the things, you know, all other things aside with Don, whether you like him or not, I mean, mostly everyone is entertained by Don and what he stand, you know, and the things and the comments that he makes towards, you know, whatever, you know, foreign player, European player, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, he wears his heart on his sleeve. And not only Don's comments, but I thought at the start of the game was kind of neat, as well as, you know, all three Canadian cities were simultaneously, it was the pregame ceremony out of Ottawa, right? Where the players, the Devils and the Senators, were one after another around center ice, which was
they stood together.
Was a neat tribute.
And anyway, Montreal, certainly it's helped them. They've played well. It's a close game going on as well. A little closer games in the other two venues. And of course we'll have out of town scores and keep you up to date with what's going on there as well. You know, again, I'm looking at a 4-1 Boston defeats the Toronto Maple Leafs. Leafs Nation post game, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll hear from Randy Carlyle in a few minutes' time. And also our own Megan Robinson is going to check in and talk about that, just being there, because a lot of people were talking about making it appointment television to watch the start of the game and watch the ceremony like you talk about it. I'm curious, you know, what the vibe, how it would have felt at Air Canada Centre. And it seemed to energize the buildings. And again, like, you know, the first couple of minutes, and give David Clarkson credit, he seemed to try to make a few things happen. So at least did have a bit of an edge for a few minutes, and then I'm just trying to figure how it all, just after that. Well, of course, that power play goal was the 3:27 mark, and that seemed to do it. You know, Ozzie, that really did. I don't remember, like, the chances, aside from that Morgan Riley chance after that, till when Richard Ponick scored with 14:27 mark, so a little over 5 minutes left in the game. I defy to remember one other scoring chance. I don't know, why could they not get scoring chances?
Just the way the Bruins skated, and, you know, collectively as all four lines. I mean, you know, the fact is that you can, you know, take Seth Griffin off of a line that, you know, he's basically thrust and put out there with, you know, Milan Lucic, for instance, you know, on a line. He was given some power play time. And for those that are listening that don't know who Seth Griffin is, I mean, he's a rookie who, you know, played his junior hockey with the London Knights, you know, was the first call-up, had a great season last year, 20 goals in Providence with the Bruin farm team.
A fifth-round pick, you're saying?
Yeah, in the fifth round. So again, a typical Bruin type of prospect and player that competes. And but anyways, the depth of the Bruins is that you can put your Daniel Paillet's or your Gregory Campbell's, who are your fourth line guys, you can throw them up on the second line. You need a faceoff late in the period, which Gregory Campbell won on the Krejci goal. And lo and behold, those guys also combined for that shorthanded goal in the third period. So Paillet and, you know, Gregory Campbell, but, you know, you mentioned as well, where were the scoring chances? It looked as though Joffrey Lupo was engaged a little bit as far as moving his feet, and yet where was Naz? You know, Naz, by the way, was 29% on the draws. You talk about puck possession, 5 wins, 12 losses. He dished out one hit. He did have 4 shots on net, and yet, you know, simply not enough from your second line centerman.
It's like looking at a report card and you can't trying to find a good mark, you know, and with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and again, I go back about the Boston Bruins, who they have to be very pleased. Claude Julien, I'm sure, is very pleased because he wants to get that team that won Stanley Cups there. So won Stanley Cups and, you know, what have you, and chat about that as well, that this was more the team that he's interested in. Of course, the Toronto Maple Leaf dressing room remained closed for a considerable amount after the game, and will lead to more speculation, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on with some of the people checking in. You know, now you're going to start. When do you start? And I'm starting it right now. First of all, I tell you, rule number one, Mark, is never mind about, you know, the analytics and all the other stuff. Don't suck at home. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's rule number one. If you're going to win and lose games, whatever games you're going to win or lose, the bad ones have to be on the road more often than not, because you got the owner at home, you got the owner, friends at home, you got all that kind of stuff. You got the crowd, you got whatever. It's like creating a bad work environment where to go to work. And the Maple Leafs are breaking that cardinal rule. And I know it from losing seasons, working with the team when they struggled, that if you just did okay at home, it made your life a whole hell of a lot easier and made it a lot more, you know, the fans go out, it's a night's entertainment, and they just want to go to a game and walk away not feeling like they do tonight.
Yeah, and so why is that? Why after how many games? This is game number
8.
What? Game number 8. How many home games is that?
They've had 5. 3 have been terrible.
Okay.
And the Montreal game was okay, and then you had the other one against the Colorado.
Well, okay, so Pittsburgh, Montreal, Detroit, and this game, right?
Yeah.
So
3 clunkers.
3 clunkers, 1 indifferent, and 1 good one. Like one good game on home ice in 5 starts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, what I wanted to say to you is I'm worried when you start calling me Mark.
Why?
Because that's your serious side when you call me. Like, only my mother calls me Mark, you know, and well, that's when I got in trouble.
Well, you're wearing the Chico Resch tribute wig tonight, so that's hard to think that way, boy.
But here's the thing, and I thought you were going to ask me, like, when does the Randy Carlyle, debate start to rate, you know, or when does that become an issue, is how long does Randy have based on the effort we saw tonight, right?
Well, we're going to ask that of people tonight. You're right, this is the first time I felt compelled to ask it.
Okay. And my real, you know, sense of that whole thing is, man, you know, like, what has Randy, you know, has he lost the room already? Was it lost last year, and this is just a further extension of the fact is that these guys simply don't want to play for Randy based on what we've seen at the end of last season, right? That he's just too hard on the players, too hard on Jake Gardner. I mean, he rides his horses. He gives the guys an opportunity to play. So my question to you then is, what's going on with this team?
Well, I'm making no excuses for the player, so I'm not letting them off, because it's I don't care who he rides. That's the pathetic effort tonight, and in some of those other games is inexcusable. That's, you know, for a team that this is not a rebuilding team. This is not the Carolina Hurricanes that have a chance to draft Connor McDavid or somebody next year, that kind of thing. But it's just the realities of the game that when you have an effort like that at home ice tonight, like, and given the start this year, having too many of those in the first eight games, then the coaches, fairly or unfairly, take, you know, bear the brunt of the blame.
Okay, should we not be given more credit to the way that Boston came in here and played? Should we not give them a little bit of credit saying, wow, look at them jump to the loose pucks. Look at them close the gap in the neutral zone. Every time that Kessel and Van Riemsdyk, they could not even get their feet moving and engage through the neutral zone because Boston, I thought, played such a great team game. When did Kessel and Van Riemsdyk start to move their legs? I'll tell you when. It was 4-0.
Well, I know. And there's an element of that we have to acknowledge for sure. But it was, again, to hear Craig Simpson. And one thing he talked about, the Bruin power play near the end there, they didn't score on it. But he just talked about, wow, this power play, it looks like a drill where the Leafs have their sticks turned over backwards to let the, you know, that's the kind of puck control it was. I mean, that's how they were outclassed. And there's no way, as we can get carried away on the upside, sometimes too much, but there's no way the Leafs should look that way on home ice against any team, never mind the score.
You know, when I go to practice often, and I've watched, and I know the Leafs are on a, what, 0-18 drought on the power play, 0-19 now?
0-19,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, 0-19. They work on it with defenders in practice, in regular practice. You know what really bugs me is morning skates, where they have two different groups at different ends of the ice, and there's no defenders, and they just move it around and go through the motions. It's almost like, what's the point of that with no defenders on your goalie? I don't care if you're running some kind of an option or whatever it is. It just, like, to me, we used to do that before as well, and I thought that this has got no, there's no purpose behind it.
There's no value to it.
No value.
Well, you see my size here, so when I played, and I was a sub, to say, of all subs, of the George Vanier basketball team, high school. So in the mornings, you're right. Actually, it was a great experience. But when we ran 5-on-0 drills, I did pretty well. And then the few times I got in a game and there's like five opponents there, it's like, well, what happened here? Like, I can't do anything. Like 5-on-0 was so great. I could get the odd shot away, stuff like that. And anyway, you've got more background that way. We'll talk more about that. We'll check in with our man Chris Johnson when we come back. Megan Robinson, also covering the action for Sportsnet 590 Fan, will join us. And Joe Haggerty, Comcast New England, a man who has got the pulse, and it would be an upbeat pulse tonight, of the Boston Bruins. A 4-1 win for the Boston Bruins over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Another ugly night, unfortunately, at Air Canada Centre, but we'll try to make it less ugly here. Grapple, go through it. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
And Dougie Hamilton carries in. Hamilton's in, a goalie scores! Toronto native Dougie Hamilton, part of the Phil Kessel trade that continues to pay dividends for the Bruins, makes it 4-0.
Joe Bowen with the call. Yeah, who would think now that Tyler Seguin is head off to Dallas that still the remnants of the Phil Kessel trade. Dougie Hamilton, second goal of the season. It was the fourth and final goal for the Boston Bruins. A 4-1 win for the Boston Bruins over the Toronto Maple Leafs in an ugly, he ugly night at Air Canada Center. Everything ugly. You like that little rap there? Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne here. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I don't know. You used words that started with disgusted, whatever. It's wow.
Disappointed, dismayed. My mom might say disgusted. Right,
like your mom's. We could use her. We could use.
I wish I could play one of my mom's voice messages that I sometimes save that should make the airwaves one of these
somewhere
days.
Down the road. They're always clean. They're not. There's no swearing.
They're clean, but you know, my mother is born and raised in the Ukraine, and she still has a real thick European accent.
That's what helps make them more humorous.
She is so funny the way in which she will call me after a loss and ask me, what in the world were the Maple Leaf defensemen doing, standing around looking as though, what are they doing?
Well, that'd be the apropos for tonight.
I can't wait to get one of those messages tonight, because she'd probably use a phrase like, you know, the Bruins were like jumping beans. They must have eaten some beans in Beantown or something like that, right? It's like, holy smokes, Mom.
Well, I can remember, I don't know how it works nowadays. The world's a bit different, but Cliff Fletcher, for example, ran a very successful team in Calgary for a lot of years. He was talking about this when he was in Toronto, that he's a social guy, Cliff Fletcher, and in Calgary, games would be at 6 o'clock, so games would be done by about 9. And when there was a home game, his thing was, he generally went out, they went out for dinner, but if it stunk, they went home and ordered pizza. Like, just say you changed your plans and you just, you know, you didn't go out. And I'm not saying guys go out and carouse all the time, but as a player, you know, when it's been a clunker that way, like what would the players do tonight?
Let me ask you something. Do you ever see the players out anywhere? I asked you this last week. You know, in our day, guys would be out. You knew if the Maple Leafs were in a bar or in a restaurant after a game. You know, right now in today's game, these guys, they're very...
What do they do?
What do they do? Where do they go?
They're very isolated.
There's a lot of restaurants that have private
rooms. Yeah, I mean, that's probably what they would look at doing.
We never did that.
I know.
Right? We would face the music.
Well, you'd have to leave out Church and Wood Street, that corner, and there were people there, and you're right. And, I mean, that's, people can argue you should run the gauntlet of it, but whatever. Yeah. That's an era that's gone by. So now you
know we're getting personal here, right? Because equally frustrated.
I'm just very curious. I think nowadays it was one thing when you guys went out in public, you still had, but people seemed to leave you alone a bit more, did they, or what? I mean, now everyone wants something in your face. I don't know what it is, but I would just think I don't know if they had plans or not, or what they do normally, but you'd rethink it after a game like tonight.
Well, I tell you what, after a clunker, you could not leave Maple Leaf Gardens without having to go by the guy who paid some money that night. You know, way that the rinks are built now, you go right from your dress room out the back door down in your car and nobody sees you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking about accountability is that there's none of that. You're isolated pretty well. And, you know, I'm not saying that's the fault of the players, but that's just the nature of the business today in the game of
hockey. Say you're Mark Osborne, and what would you do normally after a home game at Maple Leaf Gardens? Would you just go home? Would you guys go out? Would you?
I think it'd be a little bit of both, because, you know, once you became a father, you know, things changed a little bit, right? Because you had to get home for the babysitter or whatever. And, but, you know, oftentimes, you know, the guys would be going out, especially the single guys. They'd be meeting for a drink somewhere after the game. You'd grab a bite to eat. So there's been lots of different things that you would do. But you certainly would be out in public, that's for sure.
What was the guy's name across the street? They kept the basement for the team, the bar right across. Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Pat was the guy's. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. So the point being, would you ever change your plans after a clunker? Would you say, like, Madeline, you know, I was supposed to do whatever, but you know what? We should just go home, order something in.
Yeah, you might. You know, you might be so upset that, you know, you really don't want to be with anyone, not for lack of effort, but I think just because you were just very upset, you know, and you really didn't want to be talking about it, you know, but I think you took it to heart.
Let's go. Okay, Chris Johnson's going to join us in a few minutes' time. Let's look at some of the out-of-town scores. Finals that were out there, a little bit closer games, then a little bit happier venues around the NHL. What do you have, Ozzy?
Well, we do have, we had one afternoon game in San Jose, and the Buffalo Sabres, defeat the San Jose Sharks 2-1, and all the scoring came in the third period. Cody Hodgson with his first. Nicholas Delorier with his first was the eventual game winner. Brent Burns replied only 13 seconds after Delorier made it 2-0 for the Buffalo Sabres. Michael Neuvirth gets the win for the Buffalo Sabres. In Montreal, the Montreal Canadiens defeat the New York Rangers 3-1. Scoring for Montreal, Thomas Plekanec with his fifth. Lars Ehlers with his first, and Max Pacioretty His third of the season. Carl Hagelin got his second for the Rangers. And it's funny that the box score doesn't have the goaltenders who play tonight. We'll get back to you on that one, Gord.
I'll be right here when you find it.
The New Jersey Devils in overtime defeat the Ottawa Senators 3-2. For New Jersey, Damon Severson with his fourth. Have you heard of Damon Severson?
Not so much, no.
No, this is the first time you've heard of him, and he's got four goals for the New Jersey Devils. Marek Zidlicky with his first, and in overtime, and how many goals does he have for his career? Jaromir Jagr gets his second of the season.
That's a
in
specialty, right?
Overtime. For the Ottawa Senators, Alex Chiasson gets his second, and Bobby Ryan gets his second, both on the power play. There were four goals tonight on the power play. And by the way, Jagr's goal in overtime was on the power play. Schneider gets the win for Ottawa. Robert Lehner takes the loss for the Ottawa Senators. How about the shootout in Long Island, Gord?
I was just going to comment how many overtimes there have been and not so many shootouts anymore. So we did get one on Long Island. So tell me about the shootout.
I don't think it was a shootout in Long Island.
Oh, this, you meant the game.
This was a shootout.
I got you. Barn
meaning
burner.
A lot of goals. 7-5 for the New York Islanders.
Wow.
And I'll give you the goal scores for the Islanders. Anders Lee with his first. Nikolai Kuhlman with his first. Brock Nelson gets his fifth. Lubomir Vishnovsky gets his first. And then Franz Nielsen. How about this one, Gord? In the third period, he gets his second, third, and fourth goal in the third period. Natural hat trick in the third period for Franz Nielsen. And for Dallas, Vern Fiddler gets his first. Tyler Seguin with his sixth. Jason Spezza with his second. Antoine Roussel with his third. And Sean Horkoff with his first for the Dallas Stars. Chad Johnson gets the win for the Islanders. Anders Lindback suffers the loss, and he still is trying to find his ability to stop pucks.
yes, hopefully he'll find it relatively soon.
Go ahead.
Damon Severson is a second-round pick of the New Jersey Devils in 2012. And it was, he came from the Kelowna Rockets. Wow, played a lot of years. He's a defenseman. A defenseman, 61 points in 64 games last year for Kelowna. So he's been prone to get some points there playing junior hockey, at least the last little while. So that's the guy.
Four goals.
I know already.
Guy
in
the back end, right, is outstanding. The only other final score at present would be the Philadelphia Flyers with three third period goals defeat the Detroit Red Wings. Didn't the Red Wings do that the other night to the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Absolutely.
I believe they scored two goals in the third and one
in
overtime. So the tables were turned there. I mean, how many times has there been a lot of goals in the third period by teams coming back from a deficit? And it was Philadelphia's turn tonight. For the Flyers, Nicholas Grossman with his first, Michael Raffle with his third, Braden Schenn with his second, and then Raffle gets his fourth the clincher, basically. That was the fourth goal for the Red Wings. Riley Sheehan with his first, and Pavel Datsyuk got his first. How about this, scored? Ray Emery, again, with another win.
Well, that's a whole other story. It's funny about that. Last year, we got in that fight, as I said, with Brayton Holtby, the game they were getting killed in, and he just decided he would beat the crap out of the Washington goaltender. And it did turn things around, as much as a lot of people didn't like it. The fact Philadelphia named him the third star of that game, and they lost like 8-0. And this time he's the guy came in the third period for a couple of games ago, and lo and behold.
Yeah, and this is Jonas Gustafsson takes the loss for the Red Wings and three third period goals. I think this was the goaltender of old for the Maple Leafs, not the one that we saw.
This was the preseason game. Jonas Gustafsson, and it was not the guy we saw last year against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, it's Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, of course, Ozzy going over the out-of-town scores there. We know the score in Toronto, 4-1. Boston Bruins defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs. Our man Chris Johnson from Sportsnet joining us. And, Chris, I want to get to the, obviously, what's gone on postgame, but I want to tell you, I heard you on Primetime Sports a few days ago. It was a great interview and a great story about the events around tonight, what they did in Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal. But You made a last minute decision, went to Pittsburgh when you heard they were going to play the Canadian anthem. And you retold that story. And that was really one of those more spontaneous, great moments as far as when I heard you tell that story.
Yeah, it was. It's been an emotional few days. You know, quite frankly, I don't mean just for me by any stretch. I realize lots of people were more personally affected by what happened in Ottawa and Montreal earlier this week. But you're right. Wednesday, you know, I'd made plans already to go down to watch Connor McDavid play. They had an OHL game at the First Niagara Center where the Sabres are at, and was actually sitting there at 4:15 or so in the afternoon when I found out that the Penguins intended to play O Canada, and you know, I knew that Sportsnet added that as a national game. So I knew I basically had literally no time to think about it, just because, you know, it's a 3.5-hour drive from Buffalo to Pittsburgh, and jumped in my car and made it in time, and really was part of, you know, what I thought was a special night after, you know, a very difficult day here for Canadians.
Chris, kind of interesting. Gord and I happened to be watching the game on television here at the Rogers Sportsnet 590 studios, and so we didn't really get an appreciation from, I think, being at the Air Canada Center with three games simultaneously broadcasting the same opening ceremonies. Describe a little bit of the atmosphere at the Air Canada Center, if you could, because we certainly got the perspective out of Ottawa, but not so much out of Toronto.
Well, not very often, guys, where I'm sitting watching a game and I literally actually get chills and have the hair stand up, and that's what it was like. I mean, they piped in, you know, as you guys know, Lynn Sluage, the national anthem from Ottawa. And when, you know, after he sang kind of the first verse there, and he put his mic to the crowd, everyone in Toronto, and I presume everyone in Montreal, proceeded to sing. And, it was pretty special. I mean, we weren't in Ottawa tonight, but it felt like everyone was together. At least that was the feeling I had. And you know, really the emotion the fans brought here to start this night in Toronto was something special. And, you know, it's something that obviously they get ripped on a little bit for, that the ACC doesn't have that. But, you know, I thought everyone responded well. And really there was a ton of emotion in the building. And, you know, if we end up now talking about the game, I'm a little surprised the Leafs weren't able to get more from that, because, you know, that opening was, you know, when I first heard they were going to do it, I was wondering if they were going to pull it off. And it was better even than I thought it would be to live it and sit through it.
Well, that's pretty very high praise indeed. I'm glad to hear it went that way. But then to answer your query about the game, you know, what the hell happened? I mean, like, it's just three clunkers now at home in eight games. I heard that was the dressing room closed a little bit longer than usual. I mean, what's been the whole reaction about a team? They played an opponent without Zdeno Chara. And honestly, once the Boston got that first power play goal, Chris, we're sort of saying that I think Morgan Riley had a good chance, but up till Ponick's goal, or up till it was 4-0, the Leafs really weren't even getting any scoring opportunities.
No, and you know, what's really concerning here for them is this is the third time in five home games that they've been blown out this year. And, you know, all losses are the same, in that they are points that you don't earn, potentially, that you could have, you know, on the schedule. But you know, I think the manner in which these losses have gone has been very concerning. I mean, some frankly shocking comments given that we're eight games in the season from the players. I mean, Nazem Kadri saying the team has to care more, you know, jumps out from, you know, among the things I've just heard here and being in the room and you know, asking Randy Carlisle some questions. I mean, they seem to be a group that's a bit lost right now. And you know, again, I think, you know, I've been consistent that I think modest expectations should be what everyone has at best here. But to see the way this has gone and in the manner in which they've lost is, I think, perplexing for everyone. I don't think it's something you can just point to one thing and say, this is the issue, because it seems to be a little bit bigger than that right now, at least to me.
Yeah, you know what, Gord and I are trying to, you know, surmise the same thing in many respects, you know, wondering, you know, have the players, based on what we've seen tonight, because the effort in Long Island was there, the effort in Detroit was there, so there was a couple of positive games, and you would think that, you know, there was no time to basically, I don't know, just get complacent, Chris, after, you know, Chara being knocked out of the lineup, the Bruins coming in being 4-5. It didn't appear like they were the same Bruins that we're used to, and yet they certainly did play like they were the old Bruins, and the Leafs appeared to have no pushback as a result.
Well, and, you know, the thing is that there's no reason that this is the type of game that should take anyone off guard. I mean, the Bruins have kicked the crap out of the Leafs for 5 or 6 years now. I mean, other than that close playoff series, the Bruins basically win every game they play against the Leafs. And to me, with a couple days between games, which Toronto has had, you know, knowing it was going to be an emotional and special night, with it being Saturday, and lots of time to prepare for a Bruins team that is nowhere near as good as the teams we're used to seeing here. You know, you would think that this would have, you know, I thought certainly coming to the rink tonight that this was a prime opportunity for the Leafs to really, you know, have an effort that you know, is maybe a little different. That you know, and for them to go so badly so quickly, you know, they had that penalty, the power play within the first minute of the game. You know, that gets, you know, scratched out by David Clarkson's penalty once, you know, it happened twice tonight. And then have the Bruins score promptly on their end of that power play. And it just seemed like, you know, the players were almost thinking, here we go again. And you know, I don't understand yet how that's happening. But, you know, it's certainly a very frustrating atmosphere here around the team. And, you know, I'm certain around the fan base and the folks listening out there on the radios.
Well, you know, one thing you said, and I don't ever knock guys for being accommodating, because that's they help us out in our profession, and the fans appreciate guys that are, you know, say things and whatever. But I just think, you know, Nazem Kadri speaking on behalf of the team, really? Seriously? Like, you know, just, I mean, that's where, or, you know, that's where, and whether there's criticism, say, about Dion Phaneuf or whatever, you look back just recently, whether it's Matt Sundin's or Gary Roberts or just, I don't know. I'm just like, why is he speaking out, like, on behalf of the team? He's part of the problem.
How so part of the problem? I mean,
well, his effort's been terrible the last, or his results anyway, has been, he's one of the guys that struggled the last X number of games. I'm just saying, like I'm not, like, again, I'm not knocking him for offering that point of view. I'm just saying there's other guys that should be speaking out more that way. He's one of the guys that has to kind of get in line.
Maybe, but, you know, I'll give him credit, because to me, he just called it like it is. I mean, I don't, to me, like, it's one of those things, like, probably if you were in PR training, you would tell the players never to be that honest, but, you know, to me, what he said is true, and you're right. Maybe it should be up to the other guys to say it, but, you know, I don't believe Dion Phaneuf spoke tonight to anyone, and I don't highlight that to say it's this huge issue of leadership or anything. But I mean, he was one of the guys that came out and spoke, and I give him credit for not trying to lie or to maybe turn the conversation in another direction. And he basically pointed at himself, I think,
okay,
by saying that, and B, but on the team, and. You know, we are only 8 games into the season, and you know, clearly this hasn't totally gotten away from them. They're not, you know, like a 30th place team at this point, but they cannot play that way. It would go without saying.
Okay,
if they're gonna have any success.
Okay, I want to be clear then. I want to make sure I give him credit for that, for being a stand-up guy. Because you're right. Okay, I wasn't there, but I liked when Kessel was the guy saying we'll be better tomorrow, and was against the New York Rangers. And I think some other guys should talk then, more like Nazem Kadri did. So I'll turn it over to Ozzie. I don't want to.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to challenge you either.
No. I wasn't. I
was room open. I mean, I went and spoke to Phil directly, and he said, I'm not talking tonight. And
yeah.
And Dion wasn't there to talk. And, you know, I'm just saying, it's. I know talking, I don't want to make too much of it, because the game is played on the ice, and that's what's important. But, you know, I just give him credit for actually standing up and saying, basically, we sucked and we got to be better. And you know, I'll give him credit for that more than criticize him.
No, bang on. Like I said, I wasn't there, so I understand the setting now. Okay, Oz.
Yeah, you know what? That's just the part of it that I think, Chris, you know, again, we watched the game. You know, it's a 2-0 hockey game, and, you know, Kessel's on the back check. Krejci makes a great individual effort to make it 2-0 after the second period of play. And the third period opens up, and the Leafs are on the power play. And I think the most disconcerting thing for me was the effort by not only Jake Gardner, but Dion Phaneuf, you know, being in position and yet just, you know, having one of those mental cramps at the wrong period of time where, you know, Gregory Campbell makes it 3-0, and that was basically the end of the hockey game. You know, 2-0 by any stretch of the imagination on the power play at home in the third period. I mean, games can quickly change, but it almost seemed as though that third goal was the icing on the cake. These guys were done, and by the time Dougie Hamilton made it 4-0, yeah, the Leafs, you know, put out a valiant effort at the end. But I mean, you're kidding me, right? 18 shots in the third period at 4-0. You know, that to me was not the time and place to show the type of leadership I think you were needed to give during a course of a hockey game.
Well, I certainly agree with you that third goal changed things. I mean, because, you know, they certainly weren't feeling good down 2-0, but with the way the Leafs can score heading into the final period, that's not an insurmountable, situation by any stretch. And you know, to have a power play and to allow that goal, I mean, Gardner and Phaneuf both need to be better on that play. They need to be sharper. I don't know if it's a mental thing in that case, but, you know, that's the kind of moment that totally changed the night. And you're right, they poured it on from there, but I'm not sure, you know, really that's what you would expect if you're down 3-0 or 4-0. I mean, at some point you have to do something, and we did see them put a little bit of surge on it after that. But, you know, it seems to me that the details are an issue, and just making simple plays and not allowing a shorthanded goal. I mean, specialty teams have been pretty decent to the Leafs in the early part of the year, but, you know, tonight that was an area where they were beat, one of many, I guess, in this game against the Bruins.
Well, no, you got a lot of work to do, Chris. We feel like we got a bad report card, and you're the student explaining it. So we didn't mean to put you, because it's one of those types of games. So we always appreciate you coming on through thick and thin. And like I said, great work going to Pittsburgh the other day and on everything. And we will catch up with you soon, hopefully under better circumstances.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. And I don't envy you guys having to go a couple hours trying to figure out what went wrong here, because, as I say, I'm not sure there's one easy answer out there, and I'm sure that's what everyone wants.
We're just going to loop our interview and just keep playing it. That's what we're going to do. Chris Johnson over and over 24/7. Thanks, Chris.
Good stuff, guys. See ya.
Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca.
He gets the brunt of our frustration, eh? The first guy out of the gate.
Well, and you know, and I want to be careful about Nazem Kadri, yep, too, because the one he explained, I said, okay, you know, good on the guy being a stand-up guy. It's more just I like the right people to talk, and not that he's the wrong person. I just wish other guys would offer that, the veteran guys, the older guys, but I'm not going to crap on him for it.
No, you know, and that's fine, but I think you would agree, Gord, that Nazem Kadri has become a very interesting interview with things that
to
we've
his credit.
Read. To his credit, okay.
Like PK in Montreal.
No, you can't make the same comparison.
Yes. Well, no, I said you're like. Not making the, I said like. I didn't, you know, similar to. How about that?
You know what? I guess for me, it just further just causes me, you know, the scratch of my beautiful Halloween costume right now that I'm wearing, right? Like I scratch my pumpkin because of, you know, comments that he made the other day about, well, this is now the third thing that jumps out at me. Go back to the Pittsburgh game at home, clunker. What did Nas say the day before facing Sidney Crosby? You know,
he's
bring it
get,
on,
yeah.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
What happened? Nothing.
Then Tavares is your
okay,
other
then JT, you know, JT, the comparison to JT, you know, him and I, like, and then Randy's comment was, you know, what did you think of Phil, Nazem Kadri's play up until now? Well, he's a pretty confident kid, which he is, you know.
But those two, he was saying before a game, this was a reaction to, okay. Anyway, I got gotcha.
Yeah,
we'll come back. We're
going
to take a break, though, Ozzie, and it's Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne. You're listening to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. An ugly night, a 4-1 win for the Boston Bruins over the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll be back with more talk here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Now Paille steals in the Toronto zone. Centers, they score! Gregory Campbell shorthanded. Dion Phaneuf fell asleep at the side of the goal. And when the puck was turned over, Campbell was all by his little old lonesome. 3-0 Boston.
Well, I wish the team had Joe Bowen's energy and effort tonight. Boy, that was when you knew that was all she wrote. It was a 2-0 game heading into the third period, and the killer shorthanded goal to make it 3-0. Gregory Campbell getting that goal, ultimately a 4-1 win for the Boston Bruins over the Toronto Maple Leafs. We welcome you back to a tough night for Leaf fans on Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll hear a little bit later on from Randy Carlisle. We'll get Joe Haggerty with the Boston Bruin
point of view, but also Megan Robinson doing an excellent job covering it all for us at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Megan, we thought that we weren't down there, so we were going to talk about the pregame ceremonies and what went on and hoping that maybe it would inspire the Toronto Maple Leafs, which it didn't seem to do. But you've seen a lot of things and talk about, first of all, the events leading up to the game, how that came off.
Oh, well, it was planned just yesterday, Gord, that there would be, of course, the coordinated ceremony between the Leafs, the Canadians, and the Senators. And we found out just before the game today that, in fact, it would be a ceremony in Ottawa broadcast on Hockey Night in Canada that would be played on the Jumbotron in both the Montreal and Toronto games. And so that happened pregame. And so they honored Corporal Nathan Cirillo and Warrant Officer Patrice Vincent. And they did that in Ottawa, but then in each city in Montreal and Toronto, they had various officers who were also honored. So that happened, but first the Canadian National Anthem, which followed the American National Anthem. And I'll tell you, it was very loud here in Toronto at the ACC, which was being sung at the same time as it was happening at the Canadian Tire Centre. And some of the images that they were showing in Ottawa and on Hockey Night in Canada was just almost surreal. What was going on, the war memorial and the flowers that have been laid there for Corporal Cirillo. And then, you know, once O Canada wrapped and the flags had all been put down, people in Toronto here at the ACC didn't sit down. The lights came up and the three officers that were being honored before the game here were still standing at center ice. So were 20,000 people here at the ACC. And it was louder than it was during O Canada. And to see that, for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes as people really acknowledged the people that do defend our country. It was something really special, and I'd say that was probably the most energy that was in the building all night.
Well, Megan, you described the emotional and the nationalistic pride of, I think, what, you know, basically is conveyed by all Canadians at the events of what transpired in Ottawa this week. So let's fast forward that atmosphere and that energy level to what was it like towards the end of the game. We've seen some sweaters being tossed in a couple of games. This is now the Maple Leafs' fourth loss out of five games on home ice. How does it compare to some of the other home losses that we've witnessed thus far this season?
Well, they've all been pretty much the same, Mark. And today there were boos after the first Bruins goal. And then when Jonathan Bernier was pulled after allowing the fourth goal, the boos got louder. There was even some Go Raptors Go chants here at the ACC. People were leaving their seats well before the game was done. And you could tell that people are frustrated, just like the club is. And, you know, people weren't happy. So no jerseys were thrown on the ice today. But unfortunately, the energy level here just completely nosedived and plummeted because the Leafs couldn't take advantage of the energy that started the game off in the building.
We talked to Chris Johnson, and just post-game as well, we're waiting to hear from some of the players. He doesn't think Dion Phaneuf spoke, I'm not sure, but just and I'm not sure which dressing room you were covering or not, but what was the attitude like of the players post-game that way or around the dressing room?
So I was also in the Leafs dressing room, as was Chris, and it took about 13 minutes for them to open the room. Normally it's less than 10. And so our first questions to them, of course, was whether or not there was an extended team meeting going on, what was being said. And that was, in fact, the case. They met with Randy Carlyle and then spoke among themselves. Joffrey Lupul was the first person that the media spoke to. And he said that they were looking for answers, that their efforts were not good enough. Cody Franzen echoed that, and not many other players spoke. It cleared out pretty quickly in there. All of them were there when we first got in, but as I said, it cleared out pretty quickly. On the podium, we heard from Stefan Robia and Nazem Kadri. And Nazem Kadri says the Leafs need to care a little bit more. And Randy Carlyle, as you'll hear coming up soon, mentioned that he's frustrated and angry, and that's kind of the consensus of the coaching staff. So very somber mood. They did comment on the pregame ceremony, all of them very thankful that it did go down the way that it did, and took the moment to really appreciate and honor those who serve our country. But, you know, I think their focus tonight was on the lack of effort that they were, you know, they just couldn't put in for tonight's game.
Megan, I was trying to console Gord here and say, Gord, it wasn't really that bad, because should we not be giving the Boston Bruins a little bit of credit here for a team without Zdeno Chara? They trade Johnny Boychuk. They come out of the gate four wins, five losses. This is not the old Bruins that I think everybody's been used to seeing the last 3 to 4 seasons, as they we anticipated them visiting the Air Canada Center, and yet they were very, very impressive, and they've got to get some credit for their effort tonight.
It's funny you say that. Yesterday, Steve Spott was asked, that's assistant coach Steve Spott, was asked after practice if he thought that the Bruins were going to be a little bit easier to play against without Zdeno Chara in the lineup. And he had a really good quote. He said, if you harken back to minor league hockey days, you always played your best game when you had a cold. And with this is their first game without their captain. And sure enough, they were able to fill the role that he plays. And because he is such a big guy on the blue line, they did quite a good job of making sure that he wasn't missed too much in their lineup, being able to score 4 goals on Jonathan Bernier.
Well, we appreciate all your work as well, Megan. Thanks very much for joining us. Catch you down the road.
Thanks, guys.
Megan Robinson covering the Leaf game tonight for Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And she mentioned, as did Chris Johnson, about Nazem Kadri speaking. And what they've done now is they bring 2 players out to address the media on the podium. They do that rather quickly. You never know, it could be kind of an odd couple mix. So just so you know, when we're listening, it's Stefan Robida along with Nazem Kadri. Here's a little bit what they had to say to some of the questions post-game.
It's pretty simple. You know, the compete level's got to go way higher. You got to start winning more one-on-one battles. You look at Boston, and they outcompete us, and we turn the puck over, and it's not the way you're going to win in this league, and we just got to fix that.
As it's the third time in 5 games here this year you guys have lost by 3 goals. Is that a coincidence, or is there something maybe about playing at home that's not working right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's really no explanation. I think we're 2 different teams on the road and at home for some reason. So I don't know what that says. Like Roby said, I think we just got to bring our compete level a little higher and start caring a little more.
What was Randy's message, I guess, to both of you after the game? Is he angry, frustrated, combination?
Yeah, I don't think he was happy. I mean, he shouldn't be. Neither are we. So, I mean, it's not like we're sitting in there laughing and joking around. No one likes to get beat like that, and especially in our own building. So, you know, we're going to do something over the past next few days to try and figure something out. And, you know, we know that group inside that dressing room turned things around. That there's no question about that. It's just a matter of when.
What's your thoughts on the pregame ceremony today?
It was nice. It was a nice gesture. It's always nice to see, like, people getting united like this, and the way they did it with people in Ottawa and on the Jumbotron era, I thought it was a pretty nice gesture.
Yeah, it was cool for sure. Never really seen anything like that happen before, and it seemed like everyone was pretty into it. It was a nice emotional moment, but to start off the game, but as soon as the puck dropped, it was game on.
Well, I guess the word is caring. You know, what do you make of that? Got to care more. What does that mean?
Well, you know what? I don't think it's as bad as what originally, we thought, because we only went by hearsay, and to actually hear Naz, respond in that way, I don't think it was taken out of context, but he just simply stated, we need to care a little bit mm-hmm. more. And I certainly can identify with that when, for whatever reason, you feel the heat in the kitchen, things are not going your way. You know, it appears that this team, in the early going of these first 5 games of the season, are lacking some kind of confidence on home ice. Mm. And,
Which hasn't been the case the last 2 years.
No, which is really interesting. You know, you go back and you say, man, this team has always started well on home ice to start the season. And this is, I don't think we expected this. And this is part of the surprise, I think, at least for me, to see the Leafs come out of the gate after a very good preseason and what we've been used to seeing over the last couple of years. This is out of character in some respects.
Well, it seems like Ryan Johansson has basically established you don't need a preseason the way he's playing in Columbus without one. I also, when I think about this, Ozzie, the start, I said the last couple of years, because, it's fun doing those home games and they salute the crowd. It's fun anywhere. If your team's winning at home, it's kind of a neat night out, and they pay tribute to the crowd at the end. And we were seeing that quite often at home the 2 years I've the season and more than a half I've been doing this. And I realize now, last year, it's that streak at the end. There were some real clunkers, the final. So here we start off with our first five home games, three of them being clunkers. You remember the Winnipeg game? Remember that was the one? That was the one when Dion Phaneuf like basically said, yeah, we did something. And that was at home. And that was the day the music died. That they had a couple more games after
that.
Well,
they could have run the table, right? And that game against Winnipeg is like, are you kidding me?
I know, at home. And
that was awful.
And that wasn't the only one. There were a few of them towards the end. So it's kind of like fans here are skittish about the way the season ended. And worse, it seems like maybe the team is picking up where the season ended as far as home ice, well, it certainly does right now, home ice play goes, and that's disturbing.
Well, you know what, and here's an interesting thing, because I think Nazem Kadri did say it in his presser that for whatever reason, the team is able to play a little bit better on the road. And, you know, if you look at the statistics thus far in the early going of the season, as I look at the NHL stat pack here, Gord, there are 16 teams that are 500 and worse. Okay, so 16 out of the 30 are only 500 and worse. Mm-hmm. So that's not a positive statistic per se. So it's not just going on here. I mean, it's going on more than half of the teams in the National Hockey League, where you would think that playing at home would be, your record would indicate it'd be better, right?
Well, and home and road record, the disparity there isn't the same like it was years ago for a number of reasons. And I think because the venues are so similar. So I'll give that. But still, you want to be on the road. The three of them have been such bad efforts. You really want to only have three in a 41-game home season. Clunkers. You really do. And you've already got those. If that was your...
But if you want to go to the bottom of the barrel as far as teams who are at the low end of the pack, I mean, the teams with the worst home records are your Buffaloes, your Floridas, your Carolinas, your Winnipegs, and your Torontos. So,
but that ship has sailed for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. Though those other guys can make an argument why they want to get Connor McDavid or whatever. But yeah. We'll hear from a few more players. Connor McDavid got four more points. Matt Brown just talking. 34 in 12 games. That's almost three a game. That's good. Well, he could have used them tonight. Dougie Hamilton got 3 points for the Boston Bruins, but we're not going to hear from Dougie Hamilton. Megan Robinson and Chris Johnson both said one of the guys that was pretty forthcoming or was available to talk, because it was a bit different in the Leaf dressing room, was Joffrey Leupel, who seemed to have a bit of jam tonight, a little bit of effort that way. Here he is after tonight's 4-1 loss to the Boston Bruins.
The night started with an emotional ceremony. Never seen much. You guys got on track. What went wrong tonight?
They just outworked us for the most part, and just played like a better hockey team at this point.
It took a while for the room to open. You guys having a meeting, talking things out, sort of thing.
Yeah, we were just a quick talk. Obviously, after a game like that, you're looking for some answers. But again. Take some time. We got tomorrow off and come in here ready to work Monday.
Is it puzzling that it keeps happening at home ice?
Yeah. This is where you're supposed to win games and make it tough for teams to come and we don't play the same here for whatever reason, and we got to fix it.
What's your thoughts on the pregame ceremony?
Yeah, it was really nice. It was a nice moment. Obviously, your thoughts go out to victims' families and friends, and it was a really good moment. I thought they did a great job with it, all three cities.
How were the Bruins doing so well in terms of clogging up that neutral zone, making it difficult for you guys to move up the center of the ice?
Yes, same thing they always do. They're just they're a really good team. Regardless of who's in and or out of their lineup, they're just a really good hockey team that's played the same way for a long time, and they're very predictable, probably to each other. I mean, they know they're going to be on the ice all the time, and they played really well.
Joffrey, in addition to the losses themselves, is it tough that three of the ones on home ice have been by three goals that have been so lopsided?
Well, yeah, it doesn't feel good to leave the ice like that, and it's happened three times, so... I mean, you always say a loss is a loss. You didn't get the points, but that feels worse for sure. So again, we gotta fix that situation, or the team's not going anywhere. So we gotta play better on home ice.
Well, Joffrey Leupel, and
facing the media, facing the music, being quite candid,
yeah,
honest, upfront, leadership. Hey, he answered the bell.
Well, and talk about the whole thing about wearing the C and all that. I just Joffrey Leupel seems to start a couple of years ago about he could own Toronto. Now he's not doing the suit thing this year, right? About his fashion and whatever. I'm not like that, but he had that kind of clout. He has that kind of star appeal, and frustrated, but comes out and just says all you got to say. What else can you say?
No, there isn't anything that you can say. You know, here's an interesting part of the new collective bargaining, okay? And this is one thing that frustrates the coaches. Mandatory one day off a week, right? That the players get.
Isn't it mandatory one day at home and one day on the road per month or something like that? Anyway.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's a scheduled off day,
mm-hmm.
okay? And after tonight's affair, if a coach had an option, do you think that in our day, you would get the day off tomorrow after the performance?
Oh,
tonight?
I know. I know. Absolutely. Hey? Absolutely.
Oh, come on. Really?
Like, no,
I mean,
totally.
Where's the sense of accountability now? And oftentimes, and I would say this, that boys, you knew that the day off was a possibility tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it ain't anymore. And this is going to be one of those Pat Burns affairs where there are no pucks, but those days are long gone, right?
Well, and I guess, unfortunately, I find it more unfortunate games like this will continue to be a reality, which it's okay if it's not the team you support. But my understanding is that they added that a number of things, but one was that you would have a completely unencumbered scheduled day per month at home, and a completely unencumbered, like you can't be traveling or anything, day like that on the road as well. They take off days that they schedule here, there, and everywhere. So they sit down before the start of the month, or so guys can plan around it. And so tomorrow was that day, and you're right. It would be a day that every player would be expecting to come and face the music, and maybe that would be the best thing to get them going. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out if the day off helps them or not. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know what? Go back and again, I look back to the effort that they gave against Colorado. Gord,
mm-hmm.
stay with me on this.
I'm with you. I'm right here beside
you. They played that Tuesday.
And guide you.
They played that Tuesday night.
Yeah.
They had the Wednesday off. Good effort.
Mm-hmm.
They come back two nights later against Detroit. Not very good. They lost. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with me here.
I'm right here. I'm listening to
okay.
you.
Okay. Saturday, better effort. They lose in Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay. And the home and home.
Gotcha.
The next day off.
Okay. So, but that would have been one they just gave them, right?
No. But just stay off. What I'm saying to you is that in 5 days, they had 2 days off. And they lost both those games. And I'm just saying, mm-hmm. You know what? Eastern Conference, they work hard. It's a 12-month-a-year job. And yet, there's a lot of days off.
Well, I've found that as well. Now, guys do work more in the offseason is maybe the trade-off. Is the one thing, but the
we all worked out in the off season. Some of us,
yeah, you did. Yeah. I think most guys did. No, it's evolved. It's changed. You're right, but I'm with you about because the argument comes about a lack of practice time, but then you give days off because all of a sudden the schedule gets going and you'll hear a coach complain that I can't run any good practices because of the schedule. Yeah, but what about a month ago when there was a 2-week stretch and you gave the guys 3 days off when you had time to practice?
Right.
So there should be a consistency win, lose, or draw that you've got a plan in place that way. So otherwise you get bit twice in the butt that you've given them days off and then they get their mandatory days off on top of it and all of a sudden you go, crap, we should have been practicing more. Hmm. Follow me on that, okay?
I'm with you.
Okay. Well, follow me on this. We're going to connect to Joe Haggerty when we come back. Get the Boston Bruin perspective. Hear a bit more from others involved in tonight's unfortunate game for the Toronto Maple Leafs. A 4-1 win for the Boston Bruins over the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not
not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
I think that the effort level is it was frustrating is there's not a reward for your effort if you're standing still and not prepared to skate and move.
Well, a little bit from Leaf head coach Randy Carlisle. We'll hear more from him in a few minutes' time. Of course, not a lot of positive things to say. He was in a fun kind of mood this morning. His day of game press conference, morning skate press conference, not so after a 4-1 ugly loss tonight against the Boston Bruins. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
A lot of positives, Gord, if you're a Boston Bruin fan. Dougie Hamilton, a goal and two assists. Gregory Campbell, Daniel Paille, shorthanded goal, power play goal, Tuukka Rask.
And what was it? So Tuukka Rask, well, what else can he do? But he won. But how much was he tested? He still did the job. Don't get me wrong.
He was tested in the third when it was 4-0. Made a couple of saves. The game was over.
Well, Joe Haggerty gets to cover it from the Boston side. And yes, give the Bruins some credit. He covers, of course, the Bruins in the National Hockey League, Comcast out of New England. How you doing, Joe?
How are you tonight?
Well, in Toronto, a town that the Bruins have had the number, and thinking that Zdeno Chara is a big reason why, are the Bruin radio shows now saying, where are you going to put Chara back in the lineup when he comes back? Is that a worry?
I think he's been Wally Pipped by Dougie Hamilton after only one game, no question about it. I'm as surprised as anybody. And really, you know, watching that game tonight, I think you give the Bruins a lot of credit for doing some really good things defensively. A lot of the young defensemen stepped up. Tuukka Rask played well. You know, they did a lot of things extremely well and looked very focused. And I thought it was their best game of the year. But on the other hand, I also saw a lot of things that kind of made you shake your head with the Maple Leafs that played into what the Bruins were doing. And, you know, part of it was the Bruins being really good, and part of it was being the Maple Leafs being really bad.
Joe, Dougie Hamilton, I know that forever Maple Leaf fans will, peg him as the guy that was part of the Phil Kessel trade. And, you know, one goal, the goal that he scored in the third period, I don't know if he's ever skated that fast through the neutral zone, but that was a highlight type of goal. Would you say that this could have been one of Dougie Hamilton's best games as a Boston Bruin?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the way I explained it after the game was saying maybe this is what Dougie Hamilton looks like when the training wheels are off and the security blanket of having Zdeno Chara next to him is gone, and he starts to feel like, okay, it's my show now, and I get to show exactly what I can do. And it was extremely impressive. I know he worked a lot and worked awfully hard this summer on the skating speed and improving his skating and, becoming more explosive and getting faster, because he knows that that's, you know, the direction that the league is headed in general, and players obviously always want to get faster anyway. And I think it shows. It showed in preseason. It was the reason I thought he was primed to have an extremely big year. And, you know, to see him blow past Jake Gardner like he did was extremely impressive on that goal. And then not only to be skating that hard to split the D and to get in there, but also that just absolute sniper shot up high was truly special. And it was a real display of Dougie Hamilton's offensive abilities, all of them in one play. But it was also more than that in that game. You know, 10 shot attempts, 22-plus minutes with Dennis Seidenberg as the shutdown pair. He had through a bunch of hits, and I thought played with some good snarl and physicality, something that hasn't always been a part of his game in the D-zone, but I think he knows that when Chara's not there, he's going to have to use that size and strength a little more effectively in the defensive zone. And really, beginning to end, it was impressive to see his play at both ends of the ice. And the thing is, guys, that with Chara gone for 6 weeks, they're going to need that kind of performance from Dougie Hamilton night in and night out. And if he can build performances like this over the next couple of months, man, he's going to be a monster in the second half of the year.
Okay, so Joe, business as usual. The Boston Bruins were 15-1-1 in their last 17 visits to Air Canada Centre. So now they're 16-1-1. So that's what we've seen of the Bruins, it seems, against the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially in Toronto. What about this team that allegedly was struggling at 4-5-0? Why were they 4-5-0? What had been some of the problems that we didn't see tonight?
Well, offensively, they've had trouble finishing at times, and that's certainly been an issue. Defensively, they've been very undisciplined. They've made some uncharacteristic coverage mistakes in front of the net. They've had a lot of Tuukka Rask hadn't been great in the early going. They really had had a lot of things going wrong for them that they started to turn the corner. It started to look better when Chara got hurt, but they've also been definitely inconsistent. You know, you could tell they were on the right track the last few games, but you didn't see the team playing as well as it could have. And it seemed like maybe, focus was an issue a little bit at the beginning of the year. Certainly, it seemed like some players were going and some players weren't. But, you know, as time has gone on, some of that has dissipated, and then the Chara injury happens, and all of a sudden people are expecting the sky to fall and bad things to happen up and down the roster. And certainly they're going to be asking the top four defensemen, Seidenberg, Hamilton, Krug, and McQuaid, to do an awful lot and probably go above and beyond what they've done in the past, and maybe even at some points what they're capable of. But, you know, they don't have a choice now. I would say part of the issue going into camp was not clearly the Boychuk thing, the trade right before the season started. Also, Seidenberg and Lucic coming back from injuries were not themselves to start the year. Krejci missed the first few games with an injury, and now he's got 8 points in the 7 games since he went back in the lineup. So, you know, some of it was that too, but there was no doubt there was some grogginess they had to shake off at the start of the year. And a game like tonight makes you think that they're starting to get on the right track, especially without Chara to do that.
Joe, what are the options that Peter Chiarelli does, in fact, have when at the start of the season he had to unload Johnny Boychuk, and now with the Sedano-Chara injury? This was obviously a nice win for the Boston Bruins, but with the likes of a Zach Trotman, you know, a Matt Bartkowski. I mean, are you not asking too much of these guys to be able to sustain, a level of consistency for the long haul? And what are some of the options that you think Peter might have up his sleeves?
Yeah, you know, I think that they are going to try to make it work with the defensemen that they have now, because it's only a 4 to 6 week injury. And who knows with Chara? You know, he's superhuman in some ways, especially with his healing powers. So, you know, he may be able to come back right at 4 weeks, and that's all you miss is a month. And, you know, if they're only going to be out without him a month, I think they would try to win with what they have now, hope that they can go .500 and stay, you know, maybe in the bottom end of the playoff mix in the Eastern Conference, and then have him come back healthy and sort of resume business as usual. I don't see them, maybe they make a deal for a veteran like 6'7" defenseman that's going to be a draft pick or something minimal. I don't, you know, that's a possibility. But, you know, other than that, I still continue to think, and I know Chiarelli said the other day that he's kind of moving away from this direction, but I don't think he truly can. The player that they want, the player they're going to pick up, the player they need, is a top-line right wing to play with David Krejci and Milan Lucic. You know, Seth Griffith is a pretty good player. He's had a couple points. He went going into this game tonight, started to look a little more comfortable in the lineup, but, you know, he's had 1 year in the AHL. He's 5'9", 190 pounds. He's not the ideal fit on that line with those two elite players, and I think that's really the missing piece that Chiarelli's going to have to go out and get at some point, and it's going to have to be a pretty good player. But as far as defensemen go, I don't think they're going to need to go out and get anybody. They're just going to try to make do with what they have, feed a lot of minutes to Krug, to McQuaid, to Seidenberg, and to Hamilton, and then get by with Matt Bartkowski and Zach Trotman, or maybe even Joe Morrow, who was a scratch tonight, as your bottom pairing D.
I just want to ask you in closing, when since Ozzie brought up about Johnny Boychuk, and so the salary cap issue there, is Chiarelli getting any kind of, I'm not quick to dump on guys, criticize guys, but were there compliance buyouts? Did they use two compliance buyouts? Is there some they look back in retrospect that maybe they should have used? I mean, getting caught on the cap squeeze is something you don't like to have. Could they have handled it better?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's definitely getting criticized in Boston for that. You know, people point towards maybe Chris Kelly as a guy that they could have bought out, which is certainly a possibility, even though he's been a very good player for them in the early going here. Gregory Campbell, who scored a goal tonight, it was another one that I think you looked at. You know, the players that the contracts that I think people are looking at in the Boston area as points of criticism are the bottom six forwards that are getting paid, you know, over $1 million. The Campbell one, he's only about 1.5. That's not too egregious, but probably more than you want to pay a fourth line player. But the $3 million a year for a third line forward in Chris Kelly is one that I think people look at and say that's just too much for a third line guy. And you know, that's part of the reason. If you'd saved $1 million here, $1 million there, maybe you wouldn't have to have traded Johnny Boychuk away, and you wouldn't be in such dire salary cap straits. So there's definitely been a little bit of criticism headed his way. But, you know, with Kelly, he's a great leader in the room. He's a respected guy. He's a guy that kind of keeps things together. And when you go away from Sean Thornton, Andrew Ferentz, Jerome McGinley, Johnny Boychuk, when you move all these great leaders and influential people in that dressing room away, I think you have to keep some of the other guys to keep the chemistry the way that they want it. And Chris Kelly's kind of a guy that fits under that category. You know, and in my mind, they should have gone a year without trading Johnny Boychuk because they could have technically, and because they're a Stanley Cup caliber team, and you don't trade top four defensemen away from your team if you have hopes to win the Stanley Cup. But, you know, by the same token, they knew that they weren't going to have the $5.5 or $6 million a year to sign Boychuk when he becomes an unrestricted free agent after this year is over. And there's no doubt he's going to get a Brooks or a pick-level contract from somebody. So they wanted to get some assets now for him and get under the salary cap and get some flexibility going. So he made the move. But Johnny Boychuk was a fan favorite. His teammates loved him. The fans loved him. He's definitely getting criticized a lot for that trade, especially in wake of the Chara injury. No question.
Joe, appreciate it as always. Thanks very much.
You got it, guys. My pleasure.
Joe Haggerty from Comcast New England talking about the Boston Bruins. Well, Randy Carlyle sure wishes he could talk about the Boston Bruins more than the Toronto Maple Leafs, but here he is after tonight's 4-1 loss.
What are your thoughts and emotions as you're watching that game unfold? I'm wondering.
Frustration, anger. Those are two things that were probably front and center from a coaching staff's perspective. We didn't win too many battles early in the hockey game. Probably for the first 30 minutes, it was like we didn't move our feet, didn't execute at a level we're capable of, and it was like they had the puck and we struggled to get it back.
Do you see similarities between the three blowout losses that have happened here? Is there something?
Well, it seems that the first goal seems to sink our group, and then the squeezing of the sticks. And like, there's passes that we normally would make that are going into people's feet. There's pucks that are bouncing, coming to a player off the backboard, and it bounces into our feet versus on our stick or over our stick. Those are the things that are frustrating, and frustrating for our players, and they're frustrating for everybody. Specifically, a coaching staff.
Jonathan Bernier, last year got off to a great start in your net. This year he's been a little bit more inconsistent. Is there a concern there about him not quite finding
it? I just think in tonight's game, I don't really want to point the finger at our goaltending for tonight specifically, because I thought that the protection that we provided around him, the first goal came off the off a power play, and the guy whiffed the shot, actually, and it went deflected and then deflected right to their player. I think it was it Smith or Soderberg beside the net. So you live with that one. And then the second one, I think it was the breakaway. Basically, it was we pinched and we didn't have enough defensive coverage. We weren't close enough to get body position, and he stuffed in the rebound, you know. So again, you know, those are tough ones. And then the third one was what I thought was the shorthanded goal, was it? Yeah. You know, that was where we were out for 2 minutes, and you know, we had some pressure in the offensive zone, but we missed our assignment, obviously, in front of the net.
Do you think effort level was an issue? Kind of alluded to that in their comments.
I think that the effort level is the to me that it was frustrating is there's not a reward for your effort if you're standing still and not prepared to skate and move and get inside. They were inside of us for more than half the game. And they won the puck battles. They squeezed our hands off. They were skating and they were moving off the puck. They didn't turn the puck over in the first 20 minutes. I don't think they turned it over once. They got to the neutral ice to put it in and played a real simple game. And that's basically the game that we have to play to have success. And we, for whatever reason, we seem to refuse to want to do that.
Randy, can you put a finger on a different mindset with the team at home and in LA?
I think, you know, the pressure of playing at home when things don't go well, I think that's the difference. I think the first sign of adversity at home, it seems to multiply.
Is the compete something you can push for? Is it something
that... Well, we can always push for more of that, and we'll demand that, but I think a lot of that has to come from within, and, you know, there's certain things that you ask. You don't ask certain players to do something they're not capable of doing. Like, I don't ask certain players who are offensively skilled players, I don't ask them to go out and run people over, but I ask them to get in the way. And that's the terminology. Everybody can do that. Everybody can skate. You can skate if you can move to get into somebody's way. And at this level, that's really, you can't interfere anymore. You have to skate off the puck. You have to move yourself. And we consider ourselves a skating team.
Well, Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle, the ugly 4-1 loss, Mark Osborne to the Boston Bruins. And yeah, I don't know. Which is, what can you say? Forthcoming, but pretty stating the obvious in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah. Yes, obviously, the compete factor. I think Randy summed it up right there without throwing his team under the bus. It's comes down to, you know, passion and work ethic, getting the loose pucks, doing a lot of little things, moving your feet. And one thing that we could say about the Boston Bruins, they were first onto the puck. They were a team, you know, with Ochara on the lineup, you know, a couple of guys on defensemen that you've never heard of, you know, like how do these guys just simply go into the lineup and look as though they've been there for quite some time? You know, they didn't miss a beat, some of those players. And, you know, at the end of the day, interesting enough, I know you didn't like it. You didn't like it in Long Island. The results were positive. There were seven defense in the lineup. Tonight, we hardly heard of Stuart Percy.
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Houston, I never heard him mention his name until halfway through the game that I heard Stuart Percy. And 10 minutes and 17 seconds of ice time, the fewest among Leaf defenders. And I think the only person who happened to score a goal for the Leafs, Richard Panik, had 8 minutes and 35 seconds on the fourth line. And surprising enough, Jake Gardner, who was really quite
prominent along with Dion Phaneuf, with some faux pas on the goal.
And yet he ends up leading all Maple Leafs in ice time with 21-18.
Wow.
And I would say, is that trade bait? Or is that... What do you make of that?
I don't think, especially
in the third period.
Yeah, I don't think it's trade bait. I really don't know. I don't know what to make
of it.
What
is it? What is it then, Gord? Well, like 21-18, he led the team in ice time. And in the third period, on the Campbell goal, lack of effort. On the Dougie Hamilton goal, got outskated. And lo and behold, there he was again. Because, wow, we don't want to make a big deal about it.
Well, we'll get more time to talk about it before the next game. But I'm a big Jake Gardner booster, as you know. I was surprised he went back.
Hey, we're all boosters of each and every one of these
but
guys.
But it doesn't help.
The effort
okay.
Really bothers
but
me.
But the trade bait thing, you wouldn't put a guy in a game like this. Like, that doesn't help his trade value. You know, that's all I mean. You know, whatever. So I don't see it that way. I'm a little perplexed. And, yeah, Stuart Percy getting the least ice time as well. I hope he goes with, well, that's the least of our worries. His fourth line stuff wasn't the issue.
I don't have any worries.
I know.
I
wish we could
all
live life that way. But I got to worry. We're done. I wanted to do more. We just got started. And before you know, it's over. So we, of course, like we said, we'll be back at it. When's the next game?
Tuesday.
Okay.
Against the mighty Buffalo Sabres.
We had to work Halloween Friday as well.
You know how this all works to Leafs' advantage now? Right.
What's that?
They're on the West Coast, and it's a big letdown, the first game back from the West.
Well, we'll figure it out. We'll come back. You've been listening to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Good night, everybody.